Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to HJT Design Radio Straight Talk, a show dedicated to exploring all aspects of creating a great dental office, where the only dumb question is the question that's not asked. Here's Jim and Han.
Good evening, Jim Jarvis here, along with my co-host Han, Tron. Han, how are you?
I am doing fabulous, Jim.
Excellent.
The topic that we discuss tonight will be absolutely fun.
Yes, it will. Tonight's show, episode number 37, Site Selection Process. It's going to be a, well, Han and I were discussing it before the show started, and we have got like way too many notes to try to fit within the hour time frame. So this may be a part one and part two. I'm not sure. We'll see how it goes. But the site selection process, typically, we're talking about something that doesn't even fall in the normal scope of services for a dental-specific architect. It's something that is kind of that gray area that's out there that has so much of a potential to either make your new project an unbelievable success or a complete and utter disaster. Now, I don't want to be so dramatic, but in reality, it is that serious. Selecting the right site and having all the information before you sign on the bottom line is crucial. I mean, Han and I hear it every day. We hear it numerous times about how this is such a great piece of property, or that is such a great opportunity, or this is something that I want to do, selection has already been made, hasn't it, Han? And then they come to us and say,
yeah,
I want to work with this. And we look at them and go, oh, man, we don't want to have to tell you these things. But, yeah, exactly.
It actually, Jim, I think a lot of time, when we get presented with a site or a project, is after the site had been selected and purchased. And you just couldn't, it's hard to tell the, it's already hindsight if we start to point out the things that the location is great, okay? The demographic is, and the doctor-patient ratio, everything worked out. So all of that is in the line, but the site itself may be the problem. And that makes it difficult to say to the doc who just spent, a couple hundred thousand or more and on the purchase of a piece of land that no matter what you do, it's not going to improve the situation. Prime example, if you buy a piece of land that's great location, downtown and where there's a lot of traffic, a lot of eyes looking at it on a daily basis and stuff like that, but you have no room to expand. You have no room to park. Parking is huge. And so, those things you can't do too much about, except maybe buy your neighbor's property and hopefully you can use it or something. But, yeah, site selection is a lot more than simply location, location, location. Jim?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so, in a nutshell, some of the things that you really have to be cognizant of is, first of all, when you're looking at potential sites, Han already addressed it, location is important, very important. Demographics are very important. Those are the given things, but the unknown things are basically, our rule of thumb is that a piece of property is going to be a great piece of property for a dental office if it's adjacent to or close to the bank, a school, the grocery store, the gas station, basically any place where lots of people come and gather. That's important because exposure is the key. Exposure of the building. So you're talking about the building architecture itself, the signage, the visibility of that property, because your building becomes a sign. Your building becomes a billboard for your practice. And there's no amount of money that you can throw at a marketing scheme of things like radio, TV, cable, mailers, you name it, that are going to make up for something that doesn't work and doesn't fulfill that exposure for where people that if people can't find you or people don't see where you're at, you're not going to get clients. You won't get those patients. And it becomes an uphill battle. It really does. Now, one of the other crucial, and you know, that's just the beginning of the whole criteria that needs to be looked at the site. Now, the other is the size of the land that you need. Well, we're almost putting the cart before the horse, as they say, don't they, hon? You know, it's like, okay, I'm going to build a new dental practice. What do I go look for? Well, I don't know. I don't know how many acres or how big of a piece of property I need. How do you accomplish that, hon?
Well, I think first of all, before you go out and look at land and all that stuff, you should have a business plan. You know, the long term, the short term, and all that. So at least you know how many treatment room. The rule of thumb for us is, we determine the size of land by the number of treatment rooms that you will build. In other words, if you're going to build, let's say, 7 to start out, but 10 years from now you'd like to be at 20, then the piece of land and the building size should be calculated for a 20 treatment room practice. Okay? So you take the rule of thumb for each treatment room is between 350 to 400 square feet. Per treatment room, and you not and multiply that by the number of treatment rooms that you will eventually have, and then you take that product, that number, multiply by a factor of 7 to 9, and that will equal to the size of the parcel of land that you need. Okay, and so that you have to know or have an idea what the end game is before you go out and buy land, because if you buy a piece of land that's too small, you will hinder your potential to grow in place. So it may be a perfect fit for a 7 treatment room practice, but it will not be for a 20 treatment room practice. Okay, hope that makes sense. So you go the number of treatment room to multiply by the ratio of 350 to 400 square feet per treatment room. Take the product of that, multiply by 7 or 9, and that gives you the piece, you know, the size of the land that you need. And then that should accommodate the size of the building and all of the parking requirement and all that.
Mm-hmm. Right. And obviously you can fine-tune that, but and I guess what Han and I are talking about is that so many times that step of getting the dental-specific architect involved before even looking at a piece of property is missed. And so you just jump into and say, hey, this is a nice piece of property. This is what I'd like to maybe look at, or even worse yet, like you say, have purchased the property and said, okay, now I want to put my office there. It's crucial. It's crucial to understand because there are so many things. You've got your parking lot count. You know, your parking lot car count is critical. We've talked about it before. If a parking lot is over 80% full, a human will just naturally feel like there's no place to park, and they'll move on and continue on. Go back to our previous podcast and listen to the thing about first impression. That parking lot size is crucial. things like when you look at the property itself, you may have some exorbitant setbacks. Setbacks are the distances from the property line to where you're allowed to build, either build a building or build parking or build anything. We've had projects where 2-acre property really only had about an acre worth of land that was available to be built on. Well, you say, crap, an acre's a lot of room. Yeah, but if you're putting a practice on it that has the potential to be a 20 operatory, you need every square inch to put that on there. And that happened to be that happens to be that case on that property. So it had exorbitant setbacks. Working a project right now on another location where the setback from the front drive, the road is 70 feet. I mean, that's huge. 70 feet back on a piece of property. So you can very easily get yourself into trouble and not be able to have enough room to actually build a building. Things like detention or retention, which are where you have to create areas for water runoff that excessive rain water is held or detained or retained for a while until it goes into the system and can slowly meter itself out. All that takes room. All that takes square feet and acreage on your land. So creating just that idea of what exactly size do you want? So in our perfect scenario, correct me if I'm wrong, Han, is you get your size of your building based upon your operatory need. You get your size of your parking based upon how many people are in your building. That will then give you an idea of the minimum size of building footprint that you want to have. Then you can go out and look for properties based around that criteria. You were saying?
And Jim, one of the discussion about parking often is there's a misperception that the municipality requires so many parking space based on the size of the building. That is true, but it is more applicable to like a insurance company, a real estate company, or operation that falls under the normal commercial businesses. A dentist's office or a dental practices have more, it require more parking than the typical commercial building. Okay, it's almost like a restaurant that's always packed. The rule of thumbs that we typically use are based on the usage and not based on the requirement by the city. Because the city.
So let's go through that calculation for our listeners. Let's say we have a 10 operatory. So if we have a 10 operatory, how do we calculate how many parking spaces they need as a minimum?
Well, what you've got is you have we always work at the worst scenario, okay? Because one day your practice is going to be jam-packed, and if you don't have enough parking, you're going to be in trouble. Or you don't have the capacity, you're going to be in trouble. So we always design it to the optimal, and then you can back it off if you are a lot more efficient in your scheduling and so on. But typically, you have 10 chairs. You have a full capacity. That means you have 10 patients in the chair. You have 10 staff attending to those chairs. You're going to have two, maybe three doctor working those. You should have two doctor working those 10 chairs. So right now that you have, there's 10 patients in the chair, 10 staff, that's 20, plus two docs, that's 22. Okay. Out in the waiting room, you can also have 10 more patient waiting to get into the chair once the chair gets vacated. So there's that right off, and you have 32. You have additional staff, your administrative staff. You may have 3 to 5. So you have roughly 37 parking spaces.
Minimum.
Okay? Now,
minimum 37 because, parking spaces.
Now, there of course, there's always an exception, is that if you're in a suburbia where parking is premium and public transportation is the mode of travel, then that is the exception to the rule. But in general, other part of the country, parking is something that you need because people drive to wherever they go. So when they pull up into your parking lot and you don't have, and people rarely carpool, okay, when they go to the dentist. And they may bring companions or, a whole village of relative with them and stuff like that. But you need, the calculations, you need minimum 37. It's always best to have more that you don't need than less when you need it.
Right.
Okay,
so if you were to take the 37, you take the 37 and add the 80% rule to it, that's actually 44. So theoretically, a 10 operatory should have in excess of 40 parking spaces available to it. Now, sometimes parking spaces can be shared. Let's say your property is adjacent to a grocery store, and grocery stores always have huge parking places, the successful ones. You can sometimes buy, or as we call it, rent. You rent parking spaces by easement for example, staff and that kind of stuff from that parking that's already part of the grocery store, so that you on your property can take advantage of having spaces for your clients, for the patients, for the docs, and for potentially the front staff, and obviously the patient that's coming in for their next appointment. So that can help ease things, but that's creatively ways of looking at how to get enough parking. But if you're a standalone piece of property out in the middle of nowhere with nothing else around you except for houses or woods, or, you better look at something big enough to hold 44 parking spaces for a 10 op.
Yep. Occasionally, if you're lucky, you get you're next to a church, hospital, or a large facility. Yeah, where it's becoming rather common for shared amenities like parking, but I'm always veer on the side of conservative thinking is that relationship change. Ownership of the adjacent property change. So when those changes occur, those new owner may have different plan. And they would say, yes, I see that you've got a lease for this for the next 30 years to park here, but my business model, I'm going to have a lot of people, you need to vacate. All right? So you have to look at the worst scenario and then address those the best you can, okay? Because you can't simply go, I just build it and they will come, and then I buy, and then I build more parking as I need, because that need may not be fulfilled simply because you don't have options.
Right. And I know we spend a lot of time dealing with this particular aspect of site selection, but it is so crucial. It's critical, because without it, everything else falls apart. So, back to not getting the cart before the horse, the team that you need to put together to be able to help you select the right site is critical. It must include the dental specific architect. It must include a civil engineer. It must include, obviously, a realtor or an individual that can help you with the actual purchase itself. And it must include your bank or accountant, because from the dollars and cents standpoint and all that issue, that's critical to understanding just what it is. Now, a lot of times our clients will go to the realtor first. Well, what's wrong with that, Hon?
Well, a realtor, if they are not familiar with how they need, it depends. Let me back up. I don't want to be generalized. If the if you have a discussion with the realtor to need and all that stuff, and you have a business plan that you already put together so that you know what the end, you know, the end game is, then you can share that with the realtor, and they can help find the land that will meet your present and future growth. Otherwise, they'll just simply look for you for a piece of land. Okay, I can't say that a realtor may not be the right person, but that right person should have some knowledge of your requirement, and if they don't, you should share it with them. You should know your requirement if you're looking for land.
Exactly. The realtor must have dental experience. If not, then the dental-specific architect is going to have to lead the process of site selection. It's that simple. Because the realtor is there for one reason, and that's to help find you a piece of property. Their goal is to sell you a piece of property. And that's it. Now, the architect's goal is not to sell you a piece of property. Their goal is not to sell you a building. Their goal is to provide you a service to design a facility for you. So there's the big difference there.
Jim,
yes,
you mentioned the civil engineer, and there's a lot of good civil engineer out there. But at the same time, that civil engineer, just like anyone else on your project team, working on a dentist office, should have an understanding how a dentist office functions. Okay? No,
exactly.
It's not just simply a place where you go in and get
dental offices. Yes.
Okay, because the traffic flow inside the building is important. We'll leave that to your architect to work with you on that. But the traffic flow on the outside of the building is just as important, because circulation both inside and out help to minimize a lot of headaches. A civil engineer who is accustomed to doing a site for a shopping mall, or an apartment complex and things like that, those are very general stuff. We can tell you all the criteria that associated with that type of site design. By the way, architects do site design also. Okay? But a dental office, the way that the staff enter the building, the way the patient enter the building, exit the building, the way services come to service, whether it's products or supplies and gas and mechanical and all that, they also need to be taken into consideration how those traffic circulate through the building or come to the building. So if the civil engineer is put in charge of laying out the site and help with identifying where the building should be located on the site and stuff like that, they should be at least have some experience of how a dental office functions. Okay, right. The architects certainly do, and they both work together on that, so that way you can have a much better site than simply a site.
So Jim? What we like to recommend is that we create the thing called the architectural site plan. Now, the architectural site plan is that beginning design process based around the design of your building space. Then we place it on the site, taking into account everything from setbacks, parking space requirements, all that kind of good stuff. But we also look at things like building orientation. Now, the building orientation is actually extremely critical when it comes to the operatory. Operatories in our world need to face typically to the north. Sometimes to the east, we're okay with, but south-facing operatories and west-facing operatories usually become an issue with the sun and light coming in,
heat,
you know, coming into a window. So if your operatories are on the exterior perimeter of your building and have windows facing in the wrong direction, you've got a problem that has to be addressed and dealt with. Whereas in, if you can get a piece of property that will allow you to orient your building in such a way so you can take advantage of it, you do away with that problem. Put your operatories on the north, put your operatories on the east. Those kind of things are very critical, and we look at that when we develop that architectural site plan. The architectural site plan then is the basis that the civil engineer works from to fine-tune and develop all the engineering things that are required. That's why they're called civil engineer. The things like dealing with the slope, dealing with the gradient of the property, dealing with issues of soil makeup. You know, what is the property like? You know, is it gravelly and rock, or you know, is it something that has to do with you know, is there wetlands that are on there? I mean, there's just a ton of different things that one could run into. I mean, we've run into stuff, Han, where properties were old landfills
junkyard.
In Bill's case, it was a junkyard one time, long, long, long time ago. You know, all that kind of stuff comes about. And so they help mitigate, work through that, and help us to identify what's there. Now, a lot of that stuff gets to be identified in a period of time called the due diligence. So we're going to talk about that coming up here in a little bit. But, you know, there's a lot of important things that happen. And, you know, one of the big things, the next steps, is dealing with what's called zoning and planning and the approval process. Now, that's where your civil engineer, specifically a civil engineer that's local to you. You know, Han and I, we work all over the country. Han worked all over the world. That doesn't matter. But having a civil engineer that's local to you, who understands the local municipalities, rules and regulations, who has a relationship with those individuals, is a good thing to have, isn't it, Han?
Yes, it's pretty much a must-have. You know, a civil engineer from San Francisco could work on a project in New York, but a better fit would be a civil engineer in New York working on a project in New York.
And hopefully it's just, a civil engineer that's in that particular city or adjacent city and is familiar with the specific city or municipality's rules and regulations, because planning and zoning is a major hurdle that has to be gone through. You have to go through planning and zoning before you can even attempt to try to get a building permit, and before you can even attempt to try to start to build something. And you must have, and we always recommend that you have in your negotiation, or at least your agreement with your site purchase, that it's contingent upon getting approval from planning and zoning, along with getting approval for building permits. Because if you can't get approval from planning and zoning, you can't build your building. And that piece of property is useless to you.
That would be bad news to if you bought it already.
Right. Now, there's another little group. Now, again, the civil engineer can be your advocate. He or she can be your person right there in the community who can help work through the processes, be that team member that will allow you to get those approvals, and then integrate that information into the actual complete design of the site or the building site itself. Now, there's another little set of approvals that typically you may find that you have to run through, and that's called the Architectural Review Board. Depending on your location of your site, you may have to get an Architectural Review Board approval. Now, that's a group that's going to look at that building. They're going to look at the site. They're going to look at everything, and they're going to say whether they like the way it looks or whether they don't like the way it looks, or they're going to say, we won't let you put that material on there because our ordinance says we have that right to do that. They may say it all has to, building has to all be out of brick. We worked in communities like that before. Whole building has to be made out of masonry. No other materials allowed. No siding, no anything. No painted block, nothing. It has to be brick masonry. So you need to know that. You need to know what you're going to get yourself into on that particular site. And all this, hopefully you know before you bought that piece of property. If not, it becomes a surprise, doesn't it, Han?
Yeah, because the material, some municipality, it depends on how sophisticated they are or how backward they are. They could simply look at a building material and say, that's all we want, because they don't know anything else. But it would be a surprise for you as an owner, where if you're talking to, let's say, a contractor and say, we can build this building for you and it costs X dollar, but he didn't tell you that X dollar means you get vinyl siding instead of brick. There's a huge difference in cost, and that could be a really rude discovery when your I's are not dots and your T's are not crossed to meet the zoning requirement and criteria pertaining to material, allowable material usage. So all of that, you should have some idea, and that way you can budget for it, and at least have money aside to meet those requirements, because you're going to build in their municipalities. Jim?
Exactly. Now, don't get us wrong. We're not saying that if you have not gone through the process specifically the way we say and integrated the dental-specific architect first, along with then followed up with the team of the civil engineer, the realtor, and the bank accountant, that you can't do a project. Han and I every day work on multitude projects that don't follow that process. We're just saying that this is the best scenario, the best way to set yourself up. Obviously, if you've got a piece of property and you've fallen in love with it and or you got it for an unbelievable price, we have to go back and we'll look at it. We'll see what can be done on it. We'll deal with the issues, whatever they may be, and can work through a majority of them, but it's still not the very best scenario. What we're talking about here is the very best scenario, because our goal is to give you the very best solution for your money. And so that's kind of one to preface that it's crucial that getting the design team in the architectural specific dental group like ourselves or others to be able to get that done first and bring them into the fold so early. It's never too early to call us. So the next step that we're talking about is dealing with what I call price or slash buy. Now, you might say, well, don't you want to wait and hold that to the last? And theoretically, you can. But the thing that is very, very important is you need to have an individual, and this could be your realtor, who understands the negotiation process for a dental property. Because of all these things that we're talking about, they have the potential to be useful in that negotiation process. so that you can show the seller that, for example, you've done your homework and you understand what's out there and you understand what you have to spend in the way of, let's say the property was found that it's, you know, an extremely sloping property, and it's going to require you not to put in a slab on grade or a crawl space. You're going to have to put in a basement because the property is so sloping. Well, that basement may incur a whole bunch of other costs that you never anticipated and or needed. That additional cost can be utilized in your negotiation, so hopefully you can maybe get the property for a little bit less because of that. But you need to know those things before you go negotiating. Then there's that thing called the due diligence. Now, due diligence is that period of time where you said, all right, I want this piece of property. You're going to have your realtor negotiating that particular price, whatever that's going to be. And everybody comes to, you know, after a bunch of back and forth or whatever, everybody comes to agreement, you're going to buy it. And here's the price that you're going to buy it for. So then you have something called this due diligence. Now, the due diligence should be a period of time, and it could be anywhere from 30 to 60 days. It all varies. And during that period of time, you get the opportunity to look over all of the things that we're talking about. And there's you've already heard of a bunch of them, and we don't have enough time in today's show to go over everything that has to be looked at. But you need to look over all of the issues to make sure that this is specifically the piece of property that you want to buy. Now, Han, we've had so many questions and inputs about due diligence. You want to share some of those with our listeners?
Well, let's see. You got a piece of land and it looks great. Some of the issues that we may run into is that if the land, the topography of the land is very hilly, like in Pennsylvania and some part of the country where your 2 acres of land only have a parcel that may be, three quarter of an acre that's usable. That will put you into a situation where you either, bring in dirt and fill in the slope and stuff like that to get more land to make your building work and your parking requirement and all that stuff work, which equate to additional cost. Knowing if you know that piece early on, then it could be part of the negotiation or simply have more money to take care of that because it is such a great location and all that good stuff. Utility is another thing. Power is not a big deal. Gas is not a big deal. Water is not a big deal. It's a sanitary. So if your site is at a low elevation and it needs to be pumped up and onto the street to get out of the site, then it costs you extra for a pump station. And that is becoming, we have ran into probably half a dozen projects with that requirement. So it's an extra, extra expense. One of the things that Jim kind of alluded to earlier about buildings, some municipalities are very restrictive. So if you are part of your requirement is to have a basement, you need to do your due diligence, check with the city to see whether that basement will require you to put in an elevator. Drainage to the site and all that stuff can work. When we talk about water detention, that simply means a little part of the land where scoop out like a little pond where they can, where the the rainwater can be divert to and then meter out during the rain and so on. there, but if your land, if your property is, if real estate it costs a lot and you can only get a small piece of land, but if you still need a detention, there is way to handle all of that. But mainly a lot of the issues that we run into are the size of the site is too small to accommodate the building and the parking requirement and utility, mainly sanitary. Everything else is quite solvable. Jim?
And one of the things that we've also run into, and it happens in a lot of municipalities, is where you have a scenario that as a municipality is growing and they expand further and further and further out, they're not going to pay for those utilities to be placed in along the roadway and that kind of stuff. They're going to ask you to pay for it. So let's say you have 500 feet of property along this roadway. They're going to ask that you extend the city-owned utilities 500 feet from the edge of your park, from the edge of your property line to the other edge of your property line. And then what we've seen happen before, you know, you're going to pay for it. They're going to tell you what it's going to look like, how it's going to be installed. And they may even tell you who can install it because it has to be a specific contractor or groups of contractors that do that work. And then they're going to, we've seen where they say, okay, now if somebody adjacent to you develops in the future, then they'll help reimburse you for that cost of that utility. And that could be everything from water, sewer, gas, electricity, you name it. Any utility can potentially fall into that realm. So it's very critical in your due diligence phase that you have your civil engineer verify all of the availability of those utilities and make sure that they are not encumbered by that kind of scenario where you're effectively going to have to pay on, you and I like to call it extortion, you know, pay extortion rates to be able to tap into those utilities. So again, having the right team before you actually get through your due diligence and get to the point of closing on your property is critical. Those utilities could be on the other side of the road, in which case, okay, now you'll need to know, well, it's going to cost me whatever thousands of dollars to bore under the road to get that utility to my property. You'd want to know that before you either, one, finalize your deal and or settle on your final asking price. So you know, there's a ton of site conditions. Yeah, Tom, go ahead.
Jim, there's one other thing that I just dawned on me. Sometimes if your property is located on a roadway that are owned by the Department of Transportation, you may be required to put in a deceleration lane to turn onto your property. And that is a requirement and a cost that you want to identify so that it can be part of your negotiation, or it could be an expensive item to pay for it, to make sure that I've seen that happen a couple of times.
Absolutely. I've seen what happened is not even just a deceleration lane. I've seen it happen where the powers that be said that because of your traffic flow and what it's doing to the traffic flow of the main road, they're going to require a traffic light to be installed at your access point. Guess who pays
That's
for the
nice.
Traffic light? Yeah, guess who pays for that traffic light? Not the city or the state. You do. And those aren't
now,
cheap.
I was involved in a project one time where the developer forgot. It's kind of an oversight on their part, where they paid $750,000 for a deceleration lane. That was a real expensive real estate, that they had to purchase from the neighbor. Those kind of price tag can break the project.
Oh, absolutely. Any of this stuff can break the project. So it's critical that you have that team. You know, don't go out there and do this by yourself. Get that team of the group of people that we talked about as part of there to help you get through that, because it's going to pay dividends. It's going to help you get through this so much quicker. It's going to effectively save you money, or the potential of save you a whole bunch of extra money that you didn't want to pay for. Now, sure, if they're going to say you have to put in a traffic light, yes, you have to put in a traffic light. But at least you know that. You know that, but you know it before you buy the property. And so you can go to the seller and say, your property is going to require me to put in a traffic light. And that traffic light is going to cost me $60,000. So we need to negotiate the price. Split it, two-thirds, one-third, whatever. But, you need to have that information way before you finalize and close on that piece of property. Things like the soil conditions. Now, Han, I think just the other day you were asking me, one of our clients was asking about, should they get soil borings done on the property before they closed on the property? Well, just like anything, for folks that don't know what a soil boring is where you go out, you hire a specific engineering consulting firm. Usually the civil engineer will either have crews that do that or they have access to crews. They'll go out and they'll punch a hole in the ground. They'll go down 10, 15, 20, 30 feet, depending on what's required, and be able to give a report and say, here's water. The water table's at so many feet. There's undisturbed virgin soil at so many feet. It'll give you the various types of soils, the bearing pressures of that soil at the varying feet. It'll tell you if there's rocks. It'll tell you if they run into some kind of debris. All those kind of things are what a soils boring report will give. Now, it's very valuable information. Not cheap. They cost anywhere from $8 to $1,000 a hole, depending on how deep they go, sometimes more. And unfortunately, it's just a little 3-inch hole in one specific spot. We've seen it before.
Jim, that cost is per hole, right?
Per hole.
Yeah.
Right. So you put in 10 holes, you could drop $30,000. And, excuse me. So, but again, only a specific point on that property is what you're getting an information for. Now, if you put in, several, it gives you a general idea, and hopefully none of them hit any debris, like a used tire field or something like that, where that's all been buried underground. You didn't know about it. That soil boring test really will be something that would be determined based upon a discussion with your civil engineer. You were saying, Han?
Yeah, I was going to ask you that. Is that, when would be an ideal time to actually do the soil boring?
Well, your civil engineer will be the one that will help you make that decision. Now, remember, we recommended a civil engineer who was local and has worked in the area. Now, the civil engineer that's local has worked in the area, knows what's happening around on all the properties that are there. They've worked on the local CVS store. They've worked on the gas station over at the corner. They've done the work on the bank over there, those kind of things. So those records are known. They know what's under the ground. And so they can say, yeah, typically in this area, we've not had any historic records that said that there was a landfill or that there was a used car dump or it was an old gas station where you might run into some oil tanks or something like that. Oh, and then they're going to say, typically in this area, this is the kind of soil you run into, or typically in this area, this is the kind of water table you run into. Only at the point where they say there's a potential of a concern would I say, then it's time to really start looking at doing soil borings and spending money before you close on the property. If they say, yep, it's been known for many years that back in, you know, 1910, that property was a landfill. Well, you're going to want to know what the heck's down there. And you want to know what it is before you go buying it. So then it's worth it to spend a couple, $2,000 or $3,000 to punch a few holes in that thing and really understand what's there. Because if it's the property that you really got to have, then you make that call. But it's not a criteria that you have to do this before closing. It's a recommendation based upon what your team is telling you and the information. So it's a specific site case-by-case basis. Does that answer your question, hon?
Yes. And Jim, to clarify that, is that you will have more soil boring done specifically where the building is going to be located to verify the, you know, the soil capacity, type of soil, so that the structural engineer can design the appropriate foundation system, or whether you can go, you know, whether you can going to have a cross piece, slab on grade, or basement, right? So the soil boring that you're talking about is before the purchase to at least give you, if it's recommended, to give you a snapshot of what is potentially at the site. But after the, if you decide to purchase the property, there will be more soil boring specifically within the building footprint, right?
Absolutely. You're exactly right. It's not a matter of if you will do them. It's a matter of when you will do them. And you're right. You will do them. Now, the good thing about it is if you decide to do them before purchasing the property and then buy the property, you don't have to do it again in that specific location. You'll just have to do the rest of the ones that you didn't do in the first place. So it's not like it's wasted money. The only time you waste that money is if you decide to back out of the deal and not buy the property. So now another thing that a civil engineer specific to that location is going to help you with, and that's environmental issues. Now, Han and I could talk for hours about the environmental issues that potentially are out there and everything from, dirty soils and contaminated things and brownstone cleanups, and it just goes on and on and on. Now, obviously, those are things you need to know about during your due diligence so that you have an understanding about what you're getting into. Environmental issues can break a project budget in a heartbeat. You could spend hundreds of thousands of dollars to clean up contaminated soil. And it's literally money that just goes right out of your project, and it's buried in the ground and or dug out of the ground and taken away, and you never get to see it again. So just, you know, something to be concerned about. Obviously, that's why we recommend having that team, the right kind of team that can help you get through these things and navigate these waters, as one would say. Now, the very last thing that we talk about is that wonderful thing at the end of this process called closing on the land. Well, a good realtor will be the entity that will help you to get to that point with all the things that we've already talked about, till you actually get to the very point that you close on the property after you've done that due diligence, after you've done all the things that we've talked about, plus the many that we haven't. Then you're able to close on the land, and then you start the process that Han just talked about. Then you start the real work of we'll start designing the building, we'll start doing all the other things. The civil engineer will start the actual soil borings for the building footprint. Some of them are out in the parking lot and that kind of stuff. And then that whole process will start. So I guess in a nutshell, in the short hour time frame, we tried to give you an idea of all the many things that have to really be looked at and addressed so that you can pick the very best site for your property. So if, how do we want to say it, Han? The best way to look at site is to not fall in love with the very first one until you've gone through this list and make sure it checks off all those things, right?
Yeah, I think there's an old saying that, you know, don't put your rose-colored glasses on when you look at properties and buildings and all that, because you have to look at it from a business standpoint. Don't get too emotional about it. You know, will it meet your requirement? And if it doesn't, how can you resolve that and how much it will cost to resolve those issues? See, if you can get a piece of land for cheap, that may be a great deal in terms of a purchase, but the money that you have to dump into the site to make it really work, at the end, it may not be a cheap or a good deal. So one of the things that what Jim was talking about earlier is that the team, put together the team, the dynamic of the team, the way they work together, communicate together, because your project is a very, very, it require a high level of collaboration. Nobody work on your project should, nobody on your project should work from an island on their own. Everybody needs to communicate. Otherwise, it will cost you time. It will cost you money. They have to be good team player. They have to be good at what they do, knowledgeable about, you know, the feel of and the need of dentistry. And they have to play together well. They can be the best at what they do, but they suck at communication, you're going to be in trouble. Jim?
Definitely. So, in summary, before you go out, before you talk with your realtor, before you fall in love with a piece of property, like Han said, create the team. Okay. Then let the team help you to create what you need to look for. What specific size of property, what orientation, what location. Let the team help you then go through, navigate the process of the things that you need to look at to verify that that piece of property is in fact that good deal. And then once that's all verified and you in fact have determined that you can build the building that you want to build, you can develop that piece of property the way you want to develop it, and it has enough room so that if you want to grow, that it will allow you to grow. It has all those particular utilities unencumbered. It has the price. It has the exposure. It has the orientation. It has the visibility. It has the access. It has the ability for you to have access. All those things are all verified. It has the ability for you to build the buildings you want because of whatever, whether it's the slope or the terrain or whatever the concern is, the environmental issues, those kind of things have all been verified, and then you get to close on that piece of property and then start the design process. So hopefully that's been interesting. Han, has there been anything that is happening here in the last few minutes on Dental Town that you want to share with our listeners?
No, actually, we, you know, the hot topic recently have been site. You know, what to do when, if you want to start from scratch and have a raw piece of land. We cover a lot of it, and I think mainly is that what the whole summary of what our discussion this evening is, put the, you know, find a professional that know that know your industry, the dental industry, how to service them, that are knowledgeable about their, you know, their field of work, and let them, you know, let them help you. One last thing, and it has nothing to do with dentistry or sight, is you, the client, you, the team captain. You may come to the table with a preconceived idea of what you want. That is great if you have that, if you already invest the time in formulating your needs and stuff. But I challenge you to be open-minded about other options. If the professional that you hire and invite to your table present a different idea, at least give them the courtesy or the ear to hear what they said, what they have to say, what they recommend, and the reason of why they make the recommendation they do. That way you get the best out of your team, the best for your money, and you may be pleasantly surprised that your idea may not be the greatest idea at the table. So there you get a much better end result than what you have anticipated. Okay, be flexible. Be open-minded. Okay? And that way you can win. Jim?
But at the same time, it is your building. It is your property. It is your complex. It's your facility. So if you want it that way, you can get it that way. That's not a problem.
Just like at Burger King.
You just have to understand that there may be other options or there may be other opportunities. But if that's not what you want, that's fine. We're not saying you have to, you know, we're not the kind of folks that say our way or no way. That's not us. There's others out there that do it that way. We don't. You know, we work with any kind of equipment supplier. We work with any kind of manufacturer. We work with many types of materials. That's all out there. It's all available to you to be utilized in your project. I guess what we're trying to advocate is just have the right kind of approach and the process with the right team of people to help you get the very best for what you can get. Because if not, there's the strong potential that you're going to end up being shortchanged. And we don't want that for you. We want to give you the very best and have you have the opportunity to be the very best and succeed at the highest possible level because of that. So hopefully this has been interesting. I know Han and I enjoy doing this on the, now that we got back after missing last week. We will be having a show next week. We haven't set the topic on that yet, but we will look forward to that. And hopefully you'll get a chance to tune in or at least listen to us after the show. So with that, Han, I'll let you have the last word.
Well, I appreciate all of you plugging in and spending the time with us. Until next time, have a great evening.
You've been listening to HJT Design Radio Straight Talk with Jim and Han. To contact us and find out more info about upcoming shows, please log on to our website at www.hjtdesign.com. Until next time.